Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, why go, why go, why go? It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the errors. We fighting against each other. It's a love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. Knowing through all, keep on going. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Praying for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's while I'm trying my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Spending my strength to perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turn up for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday, and welcome to another Sunday of Urban Society. This is a India Morrell production, Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. So, as I said, welcome to another Sunday of Urban Society. We have a lot to go over tonight, primarily because we weren't on last week, and I have some issues to bring up last week that I'm going to bring up this week also, plus other news that has occurred. So the issues that were going to be last week and are now going to be this week will be an issue we had touched on before concerning cultural appropriation, what it is or what it isn't. And then also I wanted to touch on the Don Lemon and Raven Simone situation that cropped up about last week or maybe a week and a half ago. And then we're going to have some miscellaneous issues. And also, naturally, we're going to touch on the Paris, France terror attacks. Got to do that. And we're going to also touch on the protests at Missouri University that was also in the news a lot this week. But before we go there, I want to put out something here concerning differences in opinions or of opinions. This as usual, had stemmed from a Facebook conversation that I was in. And what I had written in the comments section was concerning differences of opinions. And what I had written was this here. It was a real situation that did take place, and I wrote it out as such. Some guys and myself were having a discussion. I was in Germany at this time. The conversation devolved to a statement that all Germans were Nazis. I disagreed. The conversation went in a circular direction of all Germans being Nazis. I eventually asked the guy who was married to a German woman if his wife was a Nazi. He replied by saying to me, "Leave my wife out of this." To make a long story shorter, I asked that question again, and he responded, in the same way. Yet me wanting to prove to him the absurdity of his statement, or for him to admit he was married to a Nazi, I asked the question again. As soon as the question left my mouth, the bastard punched me in my face. Naturally, I punched him back in his face. The conversation was over, and he never answered that question. It was a yes or no question, but he decided to take it elsewhere. Just saying, prior to that, I had always thought this dude and I were cool. So we live and learn. But again, that was just differences in opinions. And as I had written, that was really a yes or no question. And it could have put easily to rest the notion that all Germans were Nazis. Or he could have proved it in a sense, but not exactly, because his wife still isn't all Germans. But just by me asking him, you know, because we're just having a conversation, so I thought. And conversations are supposed to be based upon things or the way one does not think. And also, conversation should be based on logic. You know, the truth of what someone is stating. But evidently, well, the conversation went there, which also goes to show that a lot of people, they make assertions, but then they have nothing to back up their assertion. Even though a question that can be put to them can very well lay their assertion just out there bare to be proved false. But that was that. That's the way that went. But also, I just wanted to read that in there concerning ideas, because I like delving into ideas, what a person thinks, and also things that I think, because I'm very much aware that some things that I think may not necessarily be correct. I would hope they would be correct, because who wants to think erroneously? I know I certainly don't. If I'm wrong, I like to be told that I'm wrong, and then again shown that I'm wrong, you know, in form of, you know, ways of conversation. Okay, with that aside, I also wanted to bring up something else, too. Again, another Facebook posting that I had read about this Dr. Joy DeGruy. I think many of us may have heard of her. She's an African-American woman who primarily has come forth with the concept of post-traumatic slave syndrome. Well, what she's saying there is, what she's meaning by that phrase is basically things that black people had experienced as slaves generations ago. In some form or fashion, those things are still with us today. And there could be some validity to what she's saying. It could be. It's an interesting concept, so I think. But that's not what I'm going to read out here. What I want to read here is something that had been posted on Facebook. As a matter of fact, she posted it on Facebook. She had a video on Facebook. You all might want to check this video out if you do. That's from Dr. Joy DeGruy. Her name is spelled DrJoyDeGruy. And she has a video on Facebook of her telling of a situation wherein she was in some supermarket somewhere with her daughter, and I think she said her sister-in-law, or it could have been a cousin, an actual blood relative. And the situation was that this blood relative of hers, or sister-in-law, but a family member, was of light complexion, so light that she could actually pass for white, or even people not knowing could mistake her for being white. Anyway, Dr. DeGruy, she, in the video, tells how she was at a checkout counter, and her family member, this woman who looked white, had went before her and, you know, did her check out or checking out, and I think she said that she had also paid by way of check. And she wrote out the check, passed it to the cashier, and the cashier just took it and put it in the drawer, and she was out. Now up steps Dr. DeGruy, and the cashier rings up her things, and Dr. DeGruy is also going to pay by way of check. But when she presented the cashier the check, all of a sudden the cashier wants to see all kinds of ID and ask her all kind of questions. And Dr. DeGruy, she was, patient, and she was asking, she was answering all of the girl's questions and providing all these kinds of IDs. And then her family member, sister or her cousin or sister-in-law, whatever she was, had stepped in and said, you know, why are you putting her through this? You know, you didn't put me through all that, and she comes to the store more than I do. Why are you doing this to her? You know? And Dr. DeGruy, she wanted to say how that white person had really stereotyped her or just wanted to be racist toward her by putting her through that nonsense. And I also want to bring up that a lot of people like to throw the word microaggression in here. They want to say that this was a form of microaggression. This is a new phrase that I'm learning is prevalent today. I hadn't heard it 10 years ago, microaggression. Well, anyway, that happened. And I had to write something in response to that. And what I had written was, there are some black folk who would have handled this incident just as Dr. Joy DeGruy handled this. But there are other black folk who would have handled it to an extent wherein the police may have been called. In these kind of situations, I've evolved to know any reaction is better than no reaction. As for myself, I'm at odds with this contemporary phrase, white privilege. I'm going into the situation of white privilege here. As I said, as for myself, because this is another phrase that's prevalent today also, white privilege. But as I said, as for myself, I'm at odds with this contemporary phrase, white privilege. A person is either racist or they are not. Hence, I think the phrase white privilege is a euphemism for racism and or racist actions. Dr. DeGruy is right. One must pick their battles, because she also said that in the video. She said that one must pick their battles in the face of racist antagonism. At least she does call it racist antagonism. Then again, at times, there's no choice. That's what I'm writing. I wrote, then again, at times, there's no choice. One must throw down when assaulted or insulted with that racist nonsense. Nobody got time for that dumb stuff. Because, see, me, I wouldn't have been like Dr. DeGruy in this situation. I mean, it would not have mattered how much stuff I had up there on the belt to be checked out. If I seen that I was being put through that situation, I would have walked out. Honestly, I wouldn't have even looked at him or her at this point. I would have just turned and left. Yes, left by myself right there on the counter, let them put it back. And I would have went to another store. I would have been angry. Can I say angry? Well, I wouldn't have felt as I had felt prior to this incident if it had been me. Because like I say, any reaction is better than no reaction. That's just my opinion about that. But then again, we all handle these situations differently. And that's just the way it is. And I'm not one of those who just stand there and answer all those questions of some idiot. Definitely not. So, okay, I understand that we're going to be coming up on a break in about a minute, and therefore I don't want to go into a new issue and then have to break off. So I will say also before this minute situation is up that you all might hear me sniffling a bit tonight because I'm just getting over a cold. Yes, I am just getting over it. But this is what happens when the weather changes, unfortunately. Anyway, we're going to have our first song now from Jasmine Sullivan. This song is entitled Brand New. From Jasmine Sullivan, Brand New. We'll be right back.
Had a dime for every new Twitter rap stream. You know the girls will be riding, working two jobs, but the boys at home making mixtapes with a don't disturb on the door now. Then I buy a Jeep dress every Friday, cause I go to every show on the weekend. And I gotta look good when I'm prepping. Yeah, he about to sign a deal.
He about to go.
Society here on Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. We just heard a song from Jasmine Sullivan entitled Brand New. That was Jasmine Sullivan, Brand New. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Call in and let us hear what you have to say or what you have to think. Okay, so briefly, to go back into the issue that I just left with this Dr. Joy DeGruy, and remembering, as I had said, that her daughter was also with her, and she had mentioned in the video how her daughter was upset having to see her mother be subjected to this kind of treatment, antagonism. And that's when Dr. DeGruy had told her daughter that in these kind of situations, one has to pick their battles, you know. And like I say, that is true. That is true. But at the same time, I always feel that any reaction is better than no reaction. And am I thinking Dr. DeGruy's actions were really no reaction because she let that woman get away with that dumb stuff? I mean, I don't do that. But anyway, moving right along. Okay, I want to go on in right now to the issue about Paris, France, what had taken place over there. A horrible tragedy situation, the terror that took place. And I will say that I was watching the news. I came home from work and I turned the news on and this situation was on. And at that point in time, they were saying something like 40 or was it 30 some odd people had been killed at that point in time. And being honest, I didn't really watch all of it. But the next day, because after a while, I turned my TV off. I'll get into that later. So as I said, I had turned my TV off. Didn't want to watch any more of that. And the next day, I turned the TV on, and I had seen that upwards of 100 some odd people had been killed in that in this particular terror attack. Just outrageous. But again, I didn't watch it much then either. I turned my TV right on off after I had seen that, and I went to the internet and I started watching something that I wanted to watch, something that was mentally appealing to me. Stuff like that is not, I mean, who can stuff like that be mentally appealing to? The only people, they have to be psychos or sadistic, you know. But anyway, like I said, it was a tragedy. And as for myself, when these things take place, I always ask myself or think to myself, you know, why do these individuals target actually innocent individuals, unarmed also? I just can't help but wonder, why do they do this? I mean, if they're so bad, I mean, so... just that, I mean, so bad, so enraged, and so committed, you know, why don't they attack security forces? You know, I mean, if they're so, you know, gung-ho, because to do, in my opinion, for people to do what these terrorists do, to me, that's cowardly. I mean, this is like bullying in a real sense. I mean, there are some... Never mind what some people say about, well, they're trying to demonstrate a point. F that. There are other ways to demonstrate a point. There are other ways to, how can I put it, you know, do something for a cause. There are other ways to do that than what these guys are doing. As I said, if they're so brave, that's a better word. If these people, men and women both, if they're so brave, why don't they attack this or that country's security forces and leave, you know, civilians alone? But then they got to know, well, there are those who like to use that cliche that there are no innocents. Sure they are. In other words, that there are no innocent people, that everybody's guilty. I mean, it's like because... France is involved in that situation in Syria. It's like those people who perform this act, they feel that no French person is innocent. That's ludicrous. Totally ludicrous. But then again, at the same time, I can't even understand this, how it is that our own government, or even the French government, let us use France as an example right here. There are those who say, well, like when the French government dropped bombs on this or that country, they don't distinguish between innocent and combatant. You know, they say that these bombs kill and their guns kill men, women, and children, innocent or not. But, you know, it goes back to the old cliche, two wrongs don't make a right. That's just the way it is. I mean, like I said, I mean, if those people are so brave, you know, they ought to attack security forces and not just, you know, innocent, as they like to say, as I'll put it, non-combatants. And for a while, that phrase was in the media often non-combatants, but now they have another phrase, and it's disgusting. It's just to me as disgusting. Well, they say soft targets, outrageous soft targets. And as I was going to say, that's as ludicrous to me or as disgusting to me as for them to say that other phrase about boots on the ground. You know, when a country is thinking about sending soldiers to this or that place, they talk, today they like to use the phrase boots on the ground, as if those boots are just on the ground in and of and by themselves. Not even, you know, it's like we're not supposed to think that there are individuals in those boots. Boots on the ground. I mean, we have to think about these things, people. I really do believe we have to think about these things, because in those boots sometimes it's our brother, our cousin, our father, our mother, our nephew, our niece, our son, our daughter. You know, that is who is in those boots on the ground. How MF enrages phrases that people throw out here at us. But anyway, still on this issue with the Paris terrorist attacks. You know, me, I actually come from a different perspective on this situation. Because as I said earlier there, you know, I watched it for a while, and then I turned my TV off because I didn't want to see no more for a number of reasons. And one reason is because I'm aware that, how can I put this here? I'm aware that, okay, the situation happened in France, and it was just, let's just say, wall-to-wall coverage. They went, you know, from the actual coverage to a commercial, back to the actual coverage again, kept us there. But at the same time, I'm very much aware that, you know, these acts take place in other countries too. But yet in these other countries, we didn't have that wall-to-wall coverage. I mean, one might say that, you know, it was a horrific act. That's true. But I can say this, though, and I think some would agree with me. I would say this, that, I mean, in France, I mean, them having wall-to-wall, back-to-back coverage, no commercial breaks even, if so, to watch that. In France, yes. But in America? I mean, we're not that close to France, you know? I mean, really. But then again, even in this country here, we were having wall-to-wall, back-to-back coverage. And like I said, I'm thinking, you know, when even I even had read, well, not read because I didn't read it, but I happened to have seen, you know, someone had posted a picture on Facebook of some terrorist attack that had taken place in Kenya. And they were talking about 147 students, you know, killed by terrorists. And just saying, and this is another reason why I didn't want to watch this French situation anymore. But in this photo, they had a picture of bodies strewn everywhere. But yet, in none of the coverage that I seen on that day, I don't know if they ever did or didn't show any mangled bodies from this terrorist attack. But then again, as I do know from any other terrorist attack, we never saw no dead bodies. You know, some say, and I will agree with this, that, you know, that was because these were European bodies that were terrorized and dead. No pictures. But yet, in this Kenyan situation, I mean, it looks like some kind of a classroom or something. Like I said, I didn't read the article. I didn't read it. But anyway, it looked like some classroom or something, and like bodies just laying everywhere. And no doubt, they're dead. But again, as I said, with the French situation, and then again, based upon, you know, the wall-to-wall, the back-to-back coverage, I mean, you know, we didn't see any bodies. And, you know, I think to myself, you know, why? Why is that? They might say because, well, these photos would be too gruesome. But you don't think that seeing black bodies sprawled out dead are also gruesome? Consider Mike Brown. Case in point, consider Eric Garner. Case in point, consider what's the other guy? Not the first guy, but like the Trayvon Martin. They showed us his body laying out. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, it's like they can show dead black bodies, but, like, you know, not dead white bodies. Has to be something not correct with that. And the media personnel have to also know that something isn't correct with that. But it's like, what? They don't care? They just do it anyway? As if, you know, I mean, but then again, we have to know that blacks aren't in control. African Americans aren't in control of media outlets. So we have to know that it's whites who are doing this. And just saying, on this issue, I'm coming at this issue from this perspective of, you know, the disparity between coverage of these kind of acts. You know, when it's black folk or non-white folk, I mean, they even show us, I'm not being funny, but, you know, at times they've even shown us up the guy or girl's nose, you know, a shot so close. I mean, you know, a close-up so close, up their nose, how MFing rages. But anyway, in reference to this, this person that I'm always mentioning, I mentioned her often on the show here, Urban Society, Dr. Stacey Patton. She had written this a few weeks back, and it wasn't even in reference to this issue here of the French terrorist attack. And, you know, no, we didn't see any bodies, you know, displayed out in death. We didn't see any of this. But what she wrote was, why don't we see a constant stream of videos of white people being brutalized and shot by police? She's talking about this just from the situation of police murders of unarmed black people. But she says, why don't we see a constant stream of videos of white people being brutalized and shot by police? Why don't we see videos of white children being attacked? Why don't we see images of dead white bodies bared for public consumption? Why don't we see open casket funerals of white victims? America is addicted to this racial porn. She calls it racial porn. Our suffering and dead bodies provide a racial ego stroke and a reminder that bodily integrity is a privilege and property of whiteness. When we see these visuals over and over again, and there is no justice for the victim, the cops are given permission to amp up their attacks and keep destroying us. Meanwhile, we are so emotionally beat down that we want to retreat to practice self-care. It's hard for us to admit that we are constantly on edge or don't know how to protect ourselves, or worse, because we can't effectively strike back against the perpetrators, or because we are dangerously afraid. We rail against the most indefensible targets. She goes on elsewhere there, but I even went too far in reading this, but I thought it was necessary to read that into the show. Interesting. And as I just read there, she calls it racial porn. I mean, because, like, I mean, like, the way they are so eager to show a lifeless black person laying out. I mean, it's almost, well, it's not on the same level, but it is somewhat reminiscent of some historical photos I have seen during what was called the lynching era in this country. I mean, it was said that, you know, white folk would travel for miles around to see some black person strung up, hung, dead also. They wanted to see the dead body. And just that, they came for miles around to see a dead body. I mean, and Dr. Patton calls it racial porn. But you know, there's also another word in the dictionary. It's called necrophilia. That's when an individual has an obsession with corpses, with dead bodies. And thinking like that, thinking about the phrase necrophilia, and then, as Dr. Patton says, racial porn, And, you know, I can't help but think that there are people who are like that. They get off on seeing dead bodies, but not just dead bodies, but dead bodies of black people in particular. But, okay, we're at a music break point now, and we're going to hear a song from Takera entitled All In. So this is Takera, her song called All In. We'll be right back.
Flix, Flix, Amsterdam, Amsterdam.com.
All in.
Banger, banger.
You ain't never got a question what it was or what it is. Baby, you're a blessing. You are everything I need and more. You ain't never gotta worry about me loving you. You are all I want. You know I'm all yours. When you're not here, it's like I'm lost with no clue. It's crazy but amazing, I'm so into you. It's like I got the world and you're my private shore. And when we kissin', it's just like a trip of joy. You got me falling, and now I'm all in. I'm proud of what you don't need to face nor hesitate. I know we were perfect, we were meant to be. And when I see the future, I see you and me. So baby, let's see if you're you are my love, I got it for you.
And quality and
I hope
today.
You be forever, forever and another lifetime. What we got is oh so special. You hold the key to my heart. I know I never gotta worry about you hurting me, hurting me. Trust and loyalty, you give that to me. Can't you see that you're my missing puzzle piece? It's crazy but amazing, I'm so into you. It's like I got the world and you're my private shore. And when we kissing, it's just like a trip of joy. You got me falling, and now I'm all in. I'm proud of what you don't need to face nor hesitate. I know we were perfect, we were meant to be. And when I see the future, I see you and me. So baby, let's see if you're
okay, welcome back to Urban Society here on India Morel's Dollhouse Radio. Okay, we just heard a song from Takera, her song entitled All In. That was Takera. Let me spell that for you. That's T-O-C-A-R-R-A, and the song is entitled All In. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Call in. I'd like to hear from you. Honestly, really would. But anyway, I'm going back to this issue that I'm on here. Now, I shouldn't have to say, but I will say, being that I said all that I just said there, I'm going to also say that in saying what I just said, that doesn't mean that I look forward to seeing some deceased white folk. No, it doesn't. Not at all. But I'm just speaking about the disparity of coverage in this situation. Because, in fact, really, I don't want to see nothing deceased. I mean, even if I'm driving, I mean, sorry to make this analogy, but it's just so. I don't want to see anything deceased, especially a human being. You know, I'd rather not see that. Basically, I don't even go to funerals. That's a long story there, but it's really more so true than not true. I don't look forward to going to funerals. I really don't. But in having said that, I also want to say this, that I'm the kind of person, if I'm driving, and I might happen to see what they unfortunately call roadkill, I'll say some unfortunate animal ran over in the road, I actually turn my head because I don't want to see that. And I ask myself, why did I have to see that right now today? Or why does that have to be there? I mean, why didn't they move it earlier? Why I got to see? Now, that's in my mind. You know, I don't need that in my head. No, I don't. But again, going back to what I was saying earlier and what Dr. Stacy Patton made reference to in terms of her phrase, racial porn, and my phrase, some people are caught up with that mindset of necrophilia. Actually enjoy seeing a dead body and a dead human being at that. I don't get it. No, it's nothing to get. Anyway, so having read what I just read there in reference to what Dr. Stacy Patton had said, I had written this even. I had said, yes, I still remember how the media treated the shooting of that woman reporter and her camera person. They never did show us their bodies sprawled out dead. Then, too, let me see what I wrote there. Oh, well, that was something else there, too. But remember that? Remember that, though? I mean, and then again, contrast that with Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, and whomever else, you know, that whose dead black body we have seen of late in the news, sprawled out dead. I mean, come on. And then again, I mean, in this situation here in France, I mean, they didn't show us any of that. Again, as I said, not that I want to see that, but why the disparity? Why? It has to be these MFs or hooked up on this racial porn or this necrophilia. It has to be. And then also, I also wanted to have pointed out, too, that I was also hearing, well, more so seeing it mentioned, because, like I said, I turned my TV off kind of early on Friday, and I haven't turned it on yet. It's not funny, but I don't want to see that because me, I find myself feeling some kind of resentment about that. And then because I do feel this sensation of a resentment, I kind of also lose focus on the victims of this situation. Granted, they are deceased. That's unfortunate. But I don't see it the same. I guess how can I see it the same? Because I don't see anything. Unlike seeing the dead body of Trayvon Martin or Eric Garner or Michael Brown. We saw that. And if we have feelings, we can't help but feel about that. But I guess not seeing nothing, well, I'm going to say it like that, but then again, it's not even really true like that. It's just the resentment that I feel because of this disparity in coverage. I kind of, you know, I can't muster the actual remorse. But again, I said that's seemingly because it's not really just that, because there have been other situations wherein I also didn't have any remorseful feelings of certain issues and situations, but that's another issue there. But also, still concerning this terror attack and how people sought to talk about it, I understand that some even went so far as to bring the Black Lives Matter movement into this situation and I guess question proponents of the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, What do you feel about the Paris, France situation? You don't feel that all lives matter there? You know, that was asked of some of the Black Lives Matter protesters, from what I understand. And in reference to that, having heard that, I have posted this to what someone had posted on Facebook. I had written here, it's we who are black who are primarily concerned about black lives. What happened in France is truly horrific and a cowardly act. Yet we must not lose sight of the quotidian horrific and cowardly acts that are done to those who are also defenseless and look just like us, and sometimes are family members or neighbors. The media constantly loses sight of these horrifying acts time and time again, until another unarmed black person is murdered by terroristic police personnel or white psychopath, or is it sociopaths? I understand exactly what you, because here I'm talking to two of my Facebook friends who were saying something similar. I had written here, I understand exactly what you, Isabella and Stacy, are saying. I too feel the same and wonder if it is normal to not feel as much for those unfortunate souls caught up in that kind of madness as I do when some unfortunate black person loses his or her life in this country for no obvious reason other than the anti-black mindset of their murderer. Yeah, that's something too. And to me, I found it interesting that other people were feeling somewhat as I was concerning, you know, unfortunately, you know, not feeling, you know, the remorse that so many other people said that they felt. You know, it just wasn't there, even right now as I talk about this. I mean, it's not the same as talking about an Eric Garner or, you know, some other unfortunate black person who's been murdered. You know, it's not the same thing. And then again, even, you know, speaking about the other situation that I brought up here about Kenya. As I said, I didn't even read that article, but even there, I feel more for them, I guess, because I saw the pictures. I guess I could say it like that. They showed a whole bunch of pictures. I mean, and then again, two different sets of pictures with black bodies sprawled out, deceased, out and rageous. And also, some do say that well, you know, going into the conspiracy type thinking, that this could have been, you know, French's 9/11 situation, because by now, anybody who does know that it's being said that the 9/11 incident was an inside job, that our intelligence agencies mastermind that, and then blamed it on the Iraqis and, well, whatever. I mean, it was interesting how, you know, they had found Egyptian passports, you know, during the 9/11 situation. They had found Egyptian passports indicating that these people are from Egypt, but yet we go and bomb Iraq. We start a war with Iraq. It would have made more sense if the passports found had been passports of Iraqi citizens. But I'm just saying. And then now in this situation, it's been put out that they kind of know who did it because they found one of the terrorist passports that fell out of his back pocket or some nonsense like that. You know. And then now that's being said. That's just a ploy for more bombings of Syria. But who knows? Who knows? But even concerning that, you know, thinking about the show to be done tonight, I had remembered something that was written by Mark Twain. I guess many of us have heard of Mark Twain, the guy who's famous for having written Huckleberry Finn. I think Tom Sawyer, I think those are two different books. But anyway, he's famous for those books, but Mark Twain, he wrote a lot of other stuff that was really thought-provoking, honestly. And what I want to read here is something called the War Prayer. And to somewhat set it up, it's a time when I guess he's talking about this country was about to go to war with somebody, and everybody was getting all amped up about going to war. You know the war fervor. And the way the story goes, it was on a Sunday, and the preacher, the minister, was up in the pulpit, haranguing the church folk about, and praying fervently about, what we're going to do in this war and how we have to prosecute this war, and asking God's blessings to, vanquish the enemy and, just kill the enemy and blight him with death and all that, So anyway, the way it starts off, it's a whole lot, not really a whole lot more to this, but I just somewhat abbreviated what I'm going to read here. And it says here that an aged stranger entered and moved with slow, noiseless step up the main aisle, his eyes fixed on the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cataract to his shoulders, his seamy face unnaturally pale even to ghastliness. With all eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side and stood there waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued his moving prayer, and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal, "Bless our arms, grant us victory, O Lord and God, Father and Protector of our land and flag." The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to step aside. Which the startled minister did, and took his place. During some moments, he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes, in which burned an uncanny light. Then, in a deep voice, he said, "I come from the throne, bearing a message from Almighty God." The word smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. He had heard the prayer of his servant, your shepherd, and will grant it if such be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import. That is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men, in that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of. Except he paused and thought. God's servant and yours has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No, it is two. One uttered and the other not. Both have reached the ear of him who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this. Keep it in mind. If you would beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware, lest without intent you invoke a curse upon your neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain on your crop, which needs it, by that act you are possibly praying for a curse on some neighbor's crop, which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your servant's prayer, the uttered part of it, commissioned by God to put into words the other part of it, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly and unthinkingly. God grant that it was so. You heard the words, "Grant us the victory, O Lord, our God." That is sufficient. The whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. Elaborations were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory. Must follow it. Cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening spirit of God, fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put into words. Okay, I have to leave that right there because we have to go into a break. It's 25 after the hour. We're gonna hear the song from Rebecca Jade entitled Galaxy. So this is Rebecca Jade and her song Galaxy. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Urban Society here on Indie Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. Okay, we just heard the song from Rebecca Jade entitled Galaxy. That's Rebecca Jade entitled Galaxy. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. Okay, and lastly, I was reading these words from Mark Twain entitled The War Prayer. And as I had last left off here, he was talking about the whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. And which pregnant words were those? Grant us the victory, O Lord our God. Then he goes on to say, elaborations were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory, must follow it, cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening Spirit of God fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put it into words. Listen. Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth into battle. Be thou near them, with them, in spirit. We also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved fireside to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, help us tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shriek of their wounded, wreathing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with... Help us to lay waste their humble homes with the hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with their little children to wander unfriended in the waste of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst. Sports of the sun flames in summer and the icy winds of winter. Broken in spirit. Worn, broken in spirit. Let me get that part back there, okay? My computer had just jumped there. All right, broken in spirit, worn with trial, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes, adore thee, Lord. Blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage. Make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love, and who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore, beset, and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen. And it goes further to say, after a pause, ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits. And then it goes on to say, it was believed afterward that the man was a lunatic because there was no sense in what he said. That was Mark Twain. I found that very interesting upon my first having read it. And this is our situation that we find ourselves in constantly as our country or any country goes forth to war. To battle, and they have their ministers with them, egging them on, the ministers of the gospel or the imams or the Quran, of the Quran, either or, both. And also still with this issue here, and with this this picture that I had gotten from Facebook, I mean, you all can't see it, but I no doubt some of you all have probably seen it. On my Facebook page, it was asked... the question was put forward, how come this Kenyan situation wasn't on the news? And as I've been saying throughout what I've been saying, I wrote back, another question ought to be, where are the French bodies of the dead sprawled out? The media can show us this, but not that. Is it really that the racist medias of European countries, including America, would rather show dead bodies? Outrageous. But okay, I'm going to go on and leave this issue because time is passing and I want to get on into some other issues as well. Okay, what I want to go into is, so I can go on and get it all out of the way, is the issue about cultural appropriation. I mean, being that no one is calling in to talk about that Paris, France situation, I guess we've seen enough of it on the news and seen enough of it and read enough on it on Facebook and Twitter. So moving right along, and I will say that maybe next week on our TV screens, unfortunately, I mean, maybe we won't see any of that then, but I wouldn't think so They'll be showing us the funerals next. You know how they do that. Yeah. So anyway, cultural appropriation. What it is and what it isn't. And me, you know, and thinking about that, watching some TV news, I mean, before I venture off to the workplace every day, I watch some news before I do that while I drink my morning coffee. And I happen to have seen, I see often this commercial about, I think it's about a cell phone. They are trying to sell a cell phone, or the commercial is about a cell phone. And actually, they have this guy, two guys, rapping, you know, to push the product forward, actually rapping. But at the same time, these two guys aren't black. They are Caucasian. And now to me, that right there can be considered a situation of cultural appropriation. Because rap isn't really a part of Caucasian or white culture. It's a part of black culture, primarily. And one could even go into that situation of, you know, intellectual property rights. But then one might say, well, how can the spoken word be an intellectual property? Not just the spoken word per se, but the vehicle in which the spoken word is carried forth, which is rap. But in some form or fashion, I kind of feel that, you know, it could be seen that way, that the vehicle of rap could be considered an intellectual property type situation, you know, a patent type thing. Because according to this thing about cultural appropriation that I had read into the show before, it also speaks about the thing about intellectual property. It says that according to proponents of the concept of cultural appropriation, such cultural borrowings are problematic for a variety of reasons, ranging from group identity and questions of cultural oppression to claims of intellectual property rights. I mean, the intellectual property right thing in reference to cultural appropriation, and then again relating that that commercial that I have seen with two white guys rapping about this cell phone. I mean, that could fall within the intellectual property right situation, but definitely it's a situation of cultural appropriation. Cultural appropriation in the sense that, you know, of they couldn't find any black do that commercial. I mean, they felt better that their product could be better sold by having two white dudes rapping, using the rap vehicle to push this product forward. I mean, cultural appropriation. And I think it's just sad. When I see that, I can't help but think that it's just sad. It's just sad. It really is sad. And, that's what I have wanted to put out there also about that in particular. And also, when it comes to cultural appropriation, a lot of people, either they don't know what it is, or they are confused as to what it is. I'm saying that to say that there are basically two other words that causes confusion with some people when it comes to cultural appropriation, what it is or isn't. Some people seem to think that acculturation is a form of cultural appropriation, which actually it isn't, because acculturation is a situation. Take a situation, two countries in particular. This is the best way, I think, to describe this. Two countries like, let's say, France and Germany. A situation of acculturation would be both countries learning something from each country, such as, you know, being acculturated to, let us put it this way, let me back up, let us say the German people being acculturated to the French culture, and vice versa, and more so vice versa, the people in France being acculturated to the German culture. Now, how might this be done? Primarily or basically with language. Germans learning to speak French and the French learning to speak German. That's a situation of acculturation, in my opinion. And then again, you know, the exchanging of foods. You know, that's a situation of acculturation. Simple like that. But when we want to go into trying to use the word acculturation between, let us say, an African country, let us say Nigeria, and let us say Germany. Germans don't want nothing from Nigeria. They don't want to learn how to speak Nigerian. I mean, really. I mean, case in point, I laugh when I say that, but I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, in Germany and France proper, in France, as a school curriculum, they have the German language to be learned, and vice versa. In Germany, they have the French language to be learned as part of their school curriculum. They don't have Nigerian as part of their school curriculum concerning languages. You know, I don't want to go all into that like that, but you get my gist of what I'm saying, correct? I hope so. But then also, I mean, that's what the word acculturation. It's not necessarily related to cultural appropriation. Cultural appropriation more so is a negative. Acculturation is a positive. And then we have the situation of assimilation. Assimilation is less than acculturation in the sense that assimilation, I'm saying, is less than acculturation primarily because assimilation could be seen more so as a negative than a positive. A case in point with assimilation, okay, we can use, let us say, Europeans again in this instance also. We can say, okay, Italians coming from Italy, coming to this country, they would be assimilated into the American culture. But at the same time, the American culture isn't taking anything from Italians other than their Italianness or their Italianism, if I can say it like that. Because, you know, we come here then to the situation of you in America, you speak English. You don't speak Italian in America. Or if you do, you speak it at home. You know, stuff like that in terms of assimilation. When an individual is assimilating, they have to leave a lot of what is theirs behind to take on, well, to assimilate the culture in which they are, in fact, going into. But then now when we come to black people, black Americans, even black Americans in particular, in this country, assimilation initially is totally negative. It's totally negative. And even going further, it is still a negative. Could be a positive, but it's still more so a negative. Because when it's said for black people to assimilate American culture, what does that mean or imply in a real sense? It means or implies that they have to leave their own culture and assimilate into the American culture. However, when it comes to black Americans, really, what culture do we have to come from? I almost want to say other than an American culture. Actually, it's somewhat more truthful to say it like that. What culture do we have to come from other than the American culture? Because remember, because of that slavery situation, our culture that we were a part of was obliterated, actually, obliterated. And just saying, they had illustrated some of that in the movie Roots. It's unfortunate that a lot of us don't really read. We'd rather watch what they show us on TV. But at least in Roots, they did show that, how they just wiped out the African culture from the Africans who were enslaved. Obliterated would be a better word. Language, You couldn't speak your language. You couldn't speak where you were from, Ghanaian, Nigerian, Somalian, Sinhalese, wherever. You couldn't speak that language. And can we say that that was being assimilated into the American culture? No, because we weren't considered, number one, people. We weren't considered to be brought here to be assimilated into the American culture. What we were brought here to be, I guess we could say, assimilated into was the American slavery culture. I hope you're following what I'm saying here in terms of assimilation here. That's just the way it was. I mean, what do we have to assimilate? What if anything, the only thing that we were given to assimilate was a culture in a real sense of submissiveness, being submissive, being docile, being proper slaves. That was then, in terms of being assimilated into the American culture, because we, in essence, were rejected from the American cultural situation. It was just like that. The two, us and culture, wasn't even spoken of in the same breath, really, or even the same sentence. It was really like that. So the situation about assimilating, I mean, what was that? Where does that come in at? I mean, we can come up to the point after slavery, wherein we then were more so geared toward assimilating into the American culture. But basically, again, we were rebuffed, cast aside. But again, we would, how can I put it? I almost want to say that we would be allowed to assimilate, basically, if we were to push aside all that made us different. But then, too, what is it that would make us different? Primarily our skin color. That's what made us different. But then again, we could go into those black people who could pass for white. They could assimilate primarily because they weren't black, but they were white and could pass for white in terms of complexion. They could assimilate with no problem. But yet, when it came to other black people seeking to assimilate, that was different. It's almost as if, okay, you know how people today talk about President Obama? They talk about how well he speaks, or how he does speak so well. I mean, like in terms of assimilation, that's a kind of linguistic assimilation, if we can put it like that, because those of us who speak in that slang fashion, I mean, that's not linguistic assimilation in a real sense, although it's English. But you know, in saying that, that brings up the misconstrued point of cultural appropriation there, because to some people, I think I spoke upon this before in another show. To some people, those really ignorant white people, the racist ones, they in a real sense see us speaking English as a form of cultural appropriation. They don't see it in the sense of assimilation, because we're not assimilated in their minds into the American culture. To them, we have appropriated the American culture. Not assimilated into it, but have taken the American culture, well, not the American culture per se, but the American language onto ourselves, and by speaking slang, we made it something that it is not. And like they would want to call that a form of cultural appropriation as opposed to assimilation. But then again, that's where the confusion comes in concerning cultural appropriation versus assimilation. Some people, they can't recognize the difference. They don't know the difference. Maybe they don't want to know the difference. I don't know what it is, but it's true. It's true. That's the thing about ideas. And I don't really want to say the differences in ideas, because by the very saying differences in ideas, it's obvious there that differences in ideas do in fact exist. But the real question ought to be, are these differences valid? Are these differences valid in the sense of being called different, or are they something entirely other, and the word difference shouldn't even be labeled between the two, because to label them different, which is not different but entirely something else, that does in fact create confusion. So with the word assimilation and appropriation, they're not the same thing. They're not even similar. Totally different. But me myself, I do in fact find that interesting, that people can so conflate the two words, the two ideas, and act as if they are or can be the same thing. And also just saying, with reference to appropriation, as I was relating to, let us say, because first I had wanted to use the African slaves, speaking historically about the African slave. I mean, during the time when blacks weren't allowed to know how to read, but then once the Civil War was over, and then reading became, I guess we can say, a national issue, a national, it's wrong to say pastime, but it became a national right, I guess we could say. I mean, schooling was considered to be, a right of the people. Now, even at that point, going through schools, you had some who didn't want to see that as a situation of going to school to be assimilated into the American cultural situation, but you have those who would actually see that as a form of cultural appropriation. They're taking over our culture. But that's those racist individuals. But I just find the terms interesting, very much so, very much so. And it's because a lot of us are lost in these terms. We're really lost in a whole lot of other things and a whole lot of other areas too. We really are. But also, moving right along, still, we got about 5 minutes left of the show. But I had also wanted to bring up something else. We're going to leave the issue of cultural appropriation, and we've been on it, and now we're done with it. It might come up again. Who knows? Somebody might call in either tonight or next week and want to talk about that. We can talk about that then also. But anyway, something else that had come up last week, but we didn't have the show last week, was a situation again concerning the disparity of news coverage concerning black and white people in this country. This article here, it has stated that 5,000 white people smashed cars at UC Berkeley. Media claims it wasn't a riot. 5,000 people, it said. And as everybody knows, it was a buzz on Facebook, I guess somewhat on Twitter too, because anybody who do know, they do know, let 5,000 black people congregate anywhere, they'll have three states' National Guards out there. I mean, really. I mean, if it happened in South Carolina, they'd have the North Carolina National Guard, the Georgia National Guard, and no doubt Mississippi National Guard, all out there if 5,000 black people were to congregate in one area. But however, in this situation, 5,000 white people fight smash cars at UC Berkeley. Media claimed it wasn't a riot. And the article, I want to read some of the article here. It says, you probably missed this one. It seems there was a brawl on and around the campus of UC Berkeley over the weekend. This brawl involved several thousand people, and police say there were weapons involved. Three people were arrested, and one was hospitalized. Yay, you might think so, but this disturbance involved mainly white people. So, like the celebration last winter following Ohio State winning the National College Championship, the media either ignored it completely or chose words other than riot to describe it. Because as we know, thanks to Fox News and the like, only black people riot. Interesting. That's really outrageous, really outrageous. And it's true. And it's true. But then again, as we know, I mean, and as was pointed out too, I mean, it don't have to be 5,000 black folk who come together. We can take our minds back to, I think, over the summertime at that pool party. I forget, somewhere there in Texas where that cop had manhandled that small child, you know, in that bikini. Just manhandled her. A whole lot of cops came to a pool party and they just started arresting black people. I mean, just rounding them up. And it wasn't 5,000. And they were children. Not even 100. Not even 50. Big difference. Big difference in the disparity of just not news coverage, but the disparity in what is seen. And I guess we could say also not seen. And then again, we can also say that if 1,000 black people were to come together, it's over some issue that is at the forefront. Not just for no party, because it's not like that. I mean, it could be at a block party, but we're not talking about it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if like 1,000 black people came together, it's for some kind of a protestation type situation. Something that has merit. But yet, 5,000 white people come together just having a party and start smashing up stuff. I guess they get drunk, start smashing up stuff. Some might say, why? I guess because they know they can do this and get away with it. But at the same time, black folk know that we can't do that. We're very much conscious of what we can and what we can't do in this society. And we are sure of that. We know that. Right now we're closing out on the show. We've got about 2 minutes left. So I don't want to go into a long article. But I have wanted to touch on the Don Lemon and the Reagan-Simone situation. And in essence, we might get to this next week. But then again, by the time next week comes around, no doubt, so much other stuff may have happened by then also. Because time is moving, and as we know, things happen in time. And let us just hope that nothing really, really egregious happens between now and the next airing of Urban Society. Let us hope that I can just go on and read this thing about Don Lemon and Raven Simone. I laugh, but I'm just saying, I'm quite sure that you all know what I'm talking about. But that having been said, I probably have less than 30 seconds left. So I'm going to go on and say, well, thank you all for listening, and I hope you all will join me next week as well. So this is Urban Society, James Jones, signing off. Have a great night.
Woo! Leaning to the left side. Leaning to the right. Mud in my two cups. I've been faded all night.
I love calling you at 4 in the morning, faded, telling you things about me I wouldn't tell you sober. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga. I got family who never see the bigger picture. I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches. I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. Cause I do not know when I'ma go, when I'ma die. So I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit. Leaning to the right side, leaning to the left, sipping on this, oh my God, there ain't nothing left. Somebody pass me an already lit spliff.
Do it.
I'm way too faded to roll one.
Just do it.
Fitting in with all the misfits.
Do it.
I need a cold one. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga.
Yeah.
I got family who never see the bigger picture.
Yeah,
I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches.
Oh.
I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. Cause I do not know. When I'ma die, so I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit. Stay lit. Yeah, stay lit.
Turn up,
yeah, stay lit.